The Cavaliers have hit a little bit of adversity. Is everything going up in flames all of a sudden, or is it actually a good thing for the Cleveland Cavaliers? We talk about it coming up next on the Courtside with the Cavaliers on SI podcast. Welcome on in to the Courtside with the Cavs on SI podcast. Spencer German, Spencer Davies, and we are all reconciling a little bit after the Thunder loss on Thursday, looking ahead to what's in store for the Cavaliers, and there's plenty to talk about after an eventful week. Spence, first of all, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing great, man. It's a Friday. It's pretty decently warmer outside than it's been the last couple
cold.
Days.
Yeah, it's been
very
cold.
I was going to say, it's going to get worse next week, so I mean, you don't really have anything to look forward to, but at least you're not freezing your nips off, so that part's nice. But other than that, it's cool.
Freezing
your nips off. You know, that's the elegant wording that I bring to the table. But I got three articles done this week. Got multiple post game shows. Doing this podcast, so it's been a productive one. And I think I'm finally out of that holiday haze.
I bought a car this week, so that was fun.
Woo! Got rid of Old Faithful.
It's always weird. I did. I mean, here's the thing. I didn't want to push my luck and like Old Faithful just like die on me randomly. So I was like, it's time. We need more space in our car. I have a child now. It's just, you know, it was time. I miss Old Faithful already. Honestly, buying a car is like bittersweet because you're excited about buying a car. But I got to be honest, like I've had that car paid off for like 6 years. So the idea of like having a car payment again is
awful. But you get done with one and then all of a sudden another one comes
along. Well,
that's
what I said.
And there's another commitment.
It was 6 years without a car payment. It was like the most glorious thing ever. But here we are. That's why we need you to like, follow, subscribe, review to this podcast, because I got to pay my car payment every month. I have no shame, Spence. No shame.
Hey, you got to get it how you live it, my man. You got to get the money
That's the quote right there. That's the quote right there. We would appreciate it, though, if you subscribe to the podcast, follow us on our post-game coverage of these games, Spence and I often over at the arena, and looking forward to bringing you plenty more coverage, both here at the podcast and just in general with the Cleveland Cavaliers on SI. But, Spence, you know, it's funny. Couple weeks back, we were kind of asking the overarching question that I think everybody was kind of asking as the calendar sort of flipped here of, hey, what else does this team need to prove? Or like, what else does this team need to show you to make you believe that they are a good team? And then they go out and they beat the Thunder, and it's like they've checked every box. Like, there's nothing else you could possibly ask of them from a regular season standpoint to do. This team has proven every step of the way that they are legitimate. And now you hit a little bit of a snag with the two losses in three games. You lose to the Pacers, obviously, at home. You go on the road, you beat them on Tuesday, then you lose to the Thunder in dominant fashion. And we can get into a little bit like what that game meant and, you know, why it kind of happened the way that it did. But I'm going to be honest, like, I thought about it more and more this week, and I have an answer to that question that's not just like they've proven everything. I think the answer to the question, Spence, is I want to see how they respond to adversity. And to this point in the season, I'm not going to say it's been perfect, but it's been a lot of good. It's been a lot of like sort of this honeymoon phase, right? With Kenny Atkinson, and everything's been working pretty much flawlessly for the most part on a nightly basis. This is the first time we've seen them, you know, get blown out like this. And this is the first time we've seen them lose a couple games in like a, you know, few game stretch. Like and on top of that, which we'll get into, guys are struggling more than they have all season, especially your role players. How do they come out of this? How do they bounce back and respond when they know like this is the first time that they've hit a little bit of a speed bump during the season? Because that, I think, will tell us a lot about this team moving forward, especially into the playoffs.
It should. And I think that they're going to have a chip on their shoulder going into Minnesota. We're recording this on a Friday. They play them on Saturday. And then you have MLK Day against Phoenix on that Monday, and then you're facing off against the Rockets, which is a team that's really on a roll at the moment. And you face them almost like in a playoff series type of environment. So with a home and home. So that should be pretty fun. You do have a Philly game in between playing the Rockets on the road and then back home on that next Saturday. But still, the point remains. There isn't really too many pushovers on this portion of the schedule, or at least up until the All-Star break. That shouldn't take away from what they've established, which is their identity, their trust in each other, and obviously how they've played consistently and brought it against every team. No matter what, they're not playing to their competition level. They're not doing any of this lollygagging against bad teams and getting up against good teams. It's not been like that. It's been pretty consistent all year. I think what you're looking at here is the Thunder in particular were able to be the aggressors in that game on Thursday. They were the ones at home looking for the lick back after they had given up 129 to the same team 8 days beforehand. And then you get to their house and they're just like, that's not going to work here. That's not going to happen. They were ultra, ultra aggressive with their hands. They were aggressive in getting to the paint. Cavs weren't good enough as far as the resistance against SGA. But you look at the other guys on the team who had great performances, like Lugans Dort, who was burning the Nets down. Jalen Williams was efficient. Alex Caruso was huge for them. Kenrich Williams, 10-day guy, 10-day center, whose name escapes me right now because he's not normally on the roster. They've got a ton of different guys that they've gone to. It wasn't just SGA and the 40 ball, but that certainly set the tone. But for the Cavs, I feel like that wasn't an effort thing. That was a, we got absolutely blitzed and had to play catch up the whole time and got away from who we were. And sometimes it's been like that when there has been ball pressure. You saw it in the second half against Indiana last Sunday. But then you saw how the Cavs came back that very next game in Indiana and were themselves in that second half. And even the first half offensively, defensively, they got back to their principles. It's just, I think that they have to get a little bit better defensively as far as their one-on-ones go. You had to turn to the zone in Indiana. It worked. It did not work against OKC. OKC yeah. was just torching them no matter what they tried. And Kenny kind of pointed to that, but I feel like these guys know what it is. They're not dumb. They've been through this before, and I mean, it's crazy how this can bring out the absolute worst in people just after you lose 2 out of 3 games and the sky is all of a sudden falling. I'm not saying that they don't mean anything. They definitely mean something, but I don't know if it has to do with roster construction. I just think that these are how the games are set up and you're playing good teams now. So you're just not used to seeing this happen. Yeah.
You know, I think what's interesting when you think about a playoff series, I mean, how many times have we seen in the playoffs? Like, yeah, there's close games and you hope that every game is close and you get like down to like a 7-game series and then game 7, like 2016 was like the perfect storm, right? Cause you got a game 7 and the game 7 was epic. I mean, a game of all time. Right. But like you hope for that every game in a series. But how many times in a series, even in that 2016 series that we all remember so well, like there was a night where the Warriors just absolutely boat raced the Cavs. And then, you know, game 3 back in Cleveland, the Cavs boat raced the Warriors. Like it just happens. Like sometimes teams just get hot. Everything's working. We knew that the Thunder are really, really good at home. I had a bunch of people sort of chiming in on Thursday night saying, why didn't they just stick with like using the bigs? And cause you know, early on it was like Jared Allen was just wide open under there. There was nobody to cover him because Isaiah Hartenstein was out. We know obviously Chet wasn't playing and it was like, I think that probably was the game plan. But when they're shooting 70% from three, like they were, you kind of got to change it up because you realize you have to keep pace with what they're doing. It's like, it's not so simple. It's just like, well, let's just keep throwing it into our big men. Cause for every 2 points you're scoring, they're scoring three. Like, I think it was just one of those weird nights where everything was clicking for the Thunder and, you know, things weren't clicking as much as maybe as they have been for Cleveland on most nights. And so you get this perfect storm where the Thunder are able to kind of boat race them. But like, as I think about like the if it was a 7-game series analogy, like this happens. Sometimes, you know, you have a close game and then you have a blowout and then the other team blows them out the next night. So In that perspective, and it's like, well, this was game 2 of the series, theoretically. It's like, okay, like, you have some clunkers. The series would be 1-1. Like, you'd be fine, you know? So, I don't know. Maybe that's, like, a broader way to sort of look at it, but that's kind of how I came away from it. So, I don't know that it should be, like, hit the panic button. But I do think, like, from a standpoint of adversity, like, yeah, we can admit that maybe this is the first time it seems like they're really going through something. And I think it's even less so about the losses because, you know, they're going to lose some games. I think we all knew at some point they'd start to lose some games, especially in a tougher stretch of the schedule that they're in. But it's more so about the struggles from guys in the team. And I think, like, the role players in particular, early in the season, it was like Ty Jerome could do no wrong. You know, Dean Wade could do no wrong. Like, Isaac Okoro was shooting like 40% from three, and he's kind of come back down to earth. So that's the thing for me. It's like, okay, this is your first bout of adversity where guys are struggling. Not everything is right, no rainbows and butterflies. Before this, it was a well-oiled machine. There was no flaws. Now you're starting to see some flaws. How do you come out the other side of this? So I do think ultimately, like, this will be a good thing for the Cavaliers, no matter what, and we will talk about this, no matter what they have in store at the trade deadline, if they decide to improve or change the roster or stay pat and be the same team.
Yeah, and do you want to diagnose, just go down the list of what's going on in my eyes? Like, do you want to just look at the role players and say, okay, this is what they can do better, this is what's happening?
Real quick, because I know we don't want to dwell too much on the Thunder game. Can I just ask the blanket question of, like, does Lou Dort just own Donovan Mitchell?
I think Lou Dort owns a lot of people.
He
to
does.
Be honest, man.
He's he chases
over screens, plays bigger than 6'4". He's a rock. He's like literally a statue, the way that he's able to body guys up, and is just, he's a football player, really. Yeah. And you know, if you want to stick on points from the Thunder game, Kenny Atkinson thinks it's kind of disrespectful to call the Thunder guys who are shorter smalls, because they do have longer kind of reach and also have that muscle and speed and athleticism that kind of make them play bigger than they really are. And another note here from me that I put on the post game show with Megs last night, and I thought we had a really good discussion, was that you could keep going to the bigs, but the thing is, if you really watched, the Thunder were following those entry passes to a T. So if they had someone guarding on the perimeter that was throwing it in to either J.A. or Evan, if they caught it low, then the Thunder were coming in, swiping right away and going the other direction. Like, OKC scored 30 points off of 21 turnovers. A lot of those were because the Cavs were in uncomfortable positions. It wasn't so much the live ball turnovers. It was kind of, they were the one that opposed their will, and they were the one that kind of took the game over. So it wasn't as simple as, oh, why can't our 7-footers just shoot over the top of 6'4", 6'5" guys? No, it's because the way that they played it, they were just more aggressive, and their defensive game plan was better than the Cavs' execution and their sharpness. I don't think the Cavs were necessarily bad or, like, bad effort-oriented. I think they just weren't as crisp as they needed to be against a team that is clearly a championship contender.
Yeah. Okay. And so that brings us to what I think over the, from just not the Thunder game, but from beyond that, like, what are the biggest things that you've sort of, that have stood out to you as things that have maybe popped up as, I don't want to say they're like major issues, but smaller issues that this team is now kind of dealing with and that they're trying to sort of work through?
I think that the ball handling, they need somebody probably more reliable when Darius and Donovan don't have it in their hands. And Evan's been very reliable as a ball handler. Like, let's not get that twisted. But is he ready to be the guy that has the ball all the time if those guys are getting blitzed? Is Max Strus and Caris LeVert, are those guys ready to be, like, the primary playmaker if Donovan and Darius are the ones that are getting covered up? Kenny referred to it with Donovan when he comes to these matchups where he's getting face guarded. They've got to do a better job of freeing him up as a coaching staff and as a team. Set some back screens, set any kind of off ball stuff, get him coming around on curls, do whatever you can to get him freed up from a defender that is in his shirt. Those are some things that I'm looking at. I feel like defensively they can be better just consistently at stopping drives and not letting guys get in too deep. They kind of bait you into taking shots closer to the rim and ones in the middle. But I think the Thunder had the personnel to really make them pay for that. And on the outside, they made them pay. Again, it was just kind of everything was working for OKC in that game. Throw out any sort of roster construction theory or any kind of effort theory. It was just one of those nights. But from a larger view, yes, Kenny Atkinson acknowledged that they have some issues with these rangier guys. So, you know, that kind of parlays into the point that I'm sure we're going to talk about with the report that came out this morning. But, like, those are the things that I'm looking at. The ball handling outside of Darius and Donovan and sometimes Evan, they need someone to be able to play make. That's why Ty Jerome is so important. And then you have the defense having to be just better at not letting dribble penetration happen as easily as it does sometimes.
Well, and I think, you know, Kenny kind of admitting it sort of speaks to, I mean, it's an issue that we've talked about before, like the longer teams give this team some issues. And I still do think largely like they deserve the benefit of the doubt. You know, they've won as many games as they've won at this point. They have a great record. They're tied for first in the NBA still in terms of record because they've done what they've done. And they have been able to, I think, play closer with a lot of those teams than they have maybe in the past. So I think they've shown that they can sort of evolve, or they have evolved over the years to be a better team when it comes to these teams that have length and have an advantage against them. But go ahead.
My question is, though, like, are the Raptors not a long athletic team?
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, I just feel like that's a trope to me because, like, OKC and Indiana, like, the Cavs haven't just gone 40 games through the season and not played against length played against strength. That to me is just like totally out of bounds. Like,
the Raptors are a good example because they have struggled with the Raptors in the past. And this year, even though the Raptors haven't been as good the last couple of years, like that's been a team that they have still struggled with. And now this year back on track showing like, okay, we can do this. So yeah, like I'm not trying to lean into the idea that like it's going to be their undoing. But I do think there's at least some evidence that that has been something that's given them some trouble. And so I think that does lead us into, as we talk about a team that's hit some struggles here at this point in the season. And, you know, the things that you lay out, Isaac Okoro not playing as well, knocking down his shots. Obviously, Dean Wade struggling a little bit as well. Sam Merrill coming off the bench. If he wants to stay in the rotation, he's got to start hitting some shots. And, you know, understanding, like you said, that Kenny Atkinson was kind of admitting that they need somebody else who can handle the ball and help sort of free up Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland. Does this set the stage for them to potentially do more at the trade deadline than we initially thought? And I think I know the report you're talking about really centered around Cam Johnson. And what's interesting about that from Brooklyn, and what's interesting is like, I've been talking about Cam Johnson as a trade chip for this team for like 2 years. Like I've always been in love with the idea of Cam Johnson. Obviously, the salary's got to match and all these different things. But then you do run into this sort of balance of how much do you want to disrupt the chemistry on this team versus how worth it is it to try to pull something off like that? Because if you can get another player like that and a wing player that this team has been coveting for years, what can that do for your pursuits of a championship and sort of pushing the chips into the center of the table? Like, I see both sides of it, but you do have to be careful of bringing in the wrong guy. I'm not saying Cam Johnson is the wrong guy if they were to pull it off, but you just never know how like an addition by subtraction can impact the locker room and the chemistry that a team has.
You have to be careful with that because I mean, like you look at example, like Isaac Okoro is one of those guys that could be on that list for a trade with Cam Johnson. You look at Caris LeVert. These are guys that they've grown with.
Well, I think
Caris
is at the top of it, right? It's an expiring contract. You're talking about the apron and all these different things. Like, he makes the most sense. But yeah, like I think Cam Johnson's due like 20 million and Caris is 14. So you have to find somewhere else to kind of match the money for sure.
Yeah. And then you look at like Jalen Tyson, who's grown close to him. Like, this isn't a game of 2K guys. Like, they love each other and they really don't want to see this go another way. And Darius Garland's documentary Tenfold, which a lot of people, you know, have to go watch. It's actually really, it's really cool. He said more than enough times to people out in the, you know, firefighters and whoever he was is visiting over the breaks and stuff like that. He's like, we have more than enough. And if they have that feeling in the locker room, then like, you've got to be really careful and really sure of what moves you're making.
Hi, I'm Devin Whitmire. People from South Carolina, like myself, are proud of their state, but even we don't know every nook and cranny or every piece of culture or history. To explore places that are off the beaten path, you have to talk to the people there because their stories, their ideas make everything come together. From Discover South Carolina, it's the Palmetto Porch. To learn more, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
There's another part of this, too, with the Cam Johnson thing that interests me and intrigues me about the reporting and the timing. So just before yesterday's game, or even like of the morning, Mark Stein and Jake Fisher came out and talked about how the Cavs are reluctant to make a move and that they're not wanting to upset the culture, as we're just talking about. You're telling me as soon as the Thunder game ends and they whoop the Cavs, they completely destroy them. 20 points was not the difference in that game. It was a 40-point game. Like, let's keep that a buck. You're telling me the day after that, all of a sudden they're trying to look at ways to get Cameron Johnson? Like, where are we getting our info from? Where are we? You know, like, I'm just saying, like, in a day's time, it just flips on its head like that. I don't see that. I don't think that has to do anything with the roster construction that Thunder lost, as I was saying. Love Cam Johnson. I think he's a really, really underrated, honestly, piece to a team that wants to contend. But getting there in the first place is difficult. And then you look at the locker room temperature. These guys love each other. Like I said, they've been around each other for 3-4 years now. They want to get it done together. They want to finish the unfinished business. And I don't know that kind of knee-jerk reaction will get you there. Plus, I don't know if that gets the job done anyway in Brooklyn's eyes, if they want way more than just a first-round pick from 2031 and guys who come off the bench. They're going to want more than that, I would assume. So that just kind of seems a little fishy to me. I don't know. It's going to be hard to get a 3-and-D wing that every team covets. If you look around NBA Twitter and you look around what all these reports are saying, every single team that's a contender wants a wing.
Yeah.
Okay, this is not something that is only, like, stick to the Cavs. Like, why won't the Cavs get a wing? Like, a lot of teams are lacking different sizes.
I mean,
like,
I've seen Cam Johnson linked to a bunch of teams. But that also is part of the reason why I understand if they are interested, why they're interested. Because, again, Cam Johnson trade rumors have existed for, like, 2-3 years now. And the Cavs have been one of the teams that have been linked to him. And like I said, I've been into that idea for a while. But, you know, if another team's going to swoop in and trade him, there's always that game you play in any sport, any league, where a team's like, well, we got to make this trade before somebody else makes it. Like, there's always a little bit of added pressure from the outside of, like, hey, they might take a guy that we're interested in. So, I like, all these things come into play. I do think when you see, like, the Cavs are reluctant to make a trade, and then you get reports of the opposite of, like, hey, they're interested in Cam Johnson.
Within a day,
I think sometimes that stems from that person probably heard like, I'm sure that there probably has been talk that the Cavs would be, you know, they would inquire about Cam Johnson.
No question.
And so they kind of just bring it back to light. We're like, yeah, you know, the Cavs have shown interest in this guy. And so they turn it into a story because it's convenient after, like, a big loss like this. So, like, that's kind of what that feels like to me, is like there probably are murmurs and rumors of them being interested. And so somebody sort of waited for the right time to bring that up. It doesn't
rival
mean that
executives.
Like, right. It doesn't mean that they, like, change their mind in an instant, but yeah. It probably means, like, they have been sort of making calls, but they also are still reluctant to trade anybody and mess and screw this thing up. But that kind of raises as we sort of pivot the conversation a little bit, Spence, because, like, I guess the big thing I want to know then is, the trade deadline in the NBA is fast approaching. It's February 6th. So we're a little under 3 weeks out now from that. If these struggles continue for the next couple weeks and, you know, you're still winning some games, but there's some hot and cold guys and whatever, how much more inclined do you, like, how far that report of they're reluctant to make a trade, do you think they would get? Like, how serious would they get about exploring something like a Cam Johnson trade if the struggles continue and this becomes something where it's like, okay, we got to fix something more abruptly than just, like, trying to see it through and get out the other side of some struggles?
It depends on how they're playing. Like, if they lose and they're good, contested, tough games, it's one thing. If they're losing and it's the fashion of, like, what happened in OKC, if it's what happened, you know, against the Hawks, and it's a clear need, these guys are more athletic than us, they're taller than us, and they're really giving us issues, then that that turns, that conversation turns. But if it's not that way, and like, I don't know, it's tough to change it, I think. And especially when you look at the results, you're halfway through the season and you have 6 losses. Like, I know the regular season doesn't mean a damn thing to anybody anymore, but that's still a huge deal. You're leading the Eastern Conference by 4 or 5 games. You're right up there with OKC. You split the season series. You got to be careful with any kind of reactionary move you make. I will put it in perspective, though. Like, if that trend is seen by other teams and other teams start pressuring the ball more, they start, you know, I don't think they're going to full court press like the Pacers do. That's only a Pacers thing, I think. But if they start strategizing that way, and then defensively they find something that the Cavs have as a weakness on both ends, like, then you can look at something and you can see. But again, there's not much there asset wise. It's hard to see what is going to get you what you need outside of parting with the core four, which is, again, why I think it's hard to think of a move otherwise. And then you look again at the quote unquote power of friendship that's in that locker room that we get those comments about. I don't know. I don't think you split it up. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. It's a fine line. I do not envy Kobe Altman, because, you know, it's going to be a tough spot to be in, especially if the struggles do continue, where he's going to have to sort of balance, like, all right, what are we doing? Are we going to break this up a little bit? And here's the thing, like, to your point on the core four, breaking up the core four, I think could be like disastrous. If you break up the team a little bit where it's like you're trading some of the role players, I do think this team is built to survive something like that. And they would be okay. But again, what is Brooklyn looking for? I mean, the nice thing now is that with Donovan Mitchell locked up and you're a few years beyond when they traded for him, you know, you have some first round picks that you can now bring back to the table and potentially trade again. They didn't have that ability in the last couple of years because those picks obviously went to Utah in the Donovan Mitchell trade in the first place. So there are assets that they now have at their disposal, but it does come down to the key question we've been asking, which is, you know, how much do you want to risk, you know, breaking up a good thing? Like I said, I agree with you. If they continue sort of on the trend they've been on, which is like, hey, you know, we have a couple bad games here or there, but we bounce right back. And again, I actually think, like, in a lot of ways, Spence, the nature of the schedule is going to tell us what we need to know before the deadline gets here, because the Cavs have this schedule that's advantageous to, like, being tested a little bit, being pushed a little bit, right? They got the Wolves coming up tomorrow, as you alluded to. They got the Suns back home in Cleveland, which isn't a very good team on paper, but, like, we know they have 3 stars on that team. Rockets playing good basketball this year. They have them in 2 and 3 games. Pistons, a young team that JB Bickerstaff has gotten his hands on and kind of done the same thing he did with the Cavs when he first got here. You got a Heat team that you struggle with sometimes. You have a Hawks team that you know you have 2 losses to this year. A Mavs team that was in the NBA Finals. And then right before the trade deadline, you get the Celtics at home, big test of a game, and then the Pistons on the road again, that young team, and then the trade deadline hits. Like, this part of the schedule is going to, I think, answer the question for us in terms of, like, okay, people who have been wondering, like, what do we still need to see from this team? If they come out of this little stretch right here where they're struggling and they bounce back and they, you know, breeze through this portion of the schedule, I think we have our answer. Even if they don't breeze through it, but they're playing competitive games, they're hanging with these teams, and they're winning some and they're losing some, I think that's just the makings of, like, okay, good NBA teams lose some games sometimes against other good teams. Like, it's fine. But if they struggle, and like you said, these teams are replicating what the Thunder did, what the Pacers did, and it's becoming a real problem for this team, and Kenny Atkinson is saying what he said last night over and over again, like, yeah, we just need some other balls, or we need to take some pressure off of Donovan Mitchell. That's where I think you'll get to that date, that date with the Pistons on February 5th. And you'll be like, okay, maybe they need to make a change here. Maybe they do need to make a move at tomorrow's deadline. But that's, I think, the beauty of this, though, Spence, is, like, because of where we're at in the schedule, because of the opponent's coming up, we will get a clear answer to those questions in the coming weeks.
I think so, too. And we haven't even gotten to the elephant in the room here, and that's Donovan Mitchell. Like a lot of this also falls on Donovan to be himself, to be the guy that we saw on Tuesday in Indiana light up the first quarter and come out with 35 points after silencing everyone who thought that maybe he's been having kind of a down year. He still has his issues finishing around the rim, but I feel like we need to get into this conversation because a big question around Cavs Twitter and with some people, when you look at some of his percentages and obviously taking a step back or to the side, however you want to look at it, is Donovan 100%? And that's, I think, a question that we can address and I can speculate on. And I feel like that's not the case at all. I think he's pretty healthy. I think that you saw what he's capable of in the first half. I don't see anything athletically or any way like that he's not beating guys off the dribble. I think the finishing is just that he's not finishing right now.
Yeah.
And that his jumper's fine. He's a little bit more focused on the perimeter areas and also making some incredible passes and letting his teammates take over. I think a lot of this also falls on Donovan, though, to find that aggressiveness again while still making sure his teammates are the ones that are shining.
And let's face it, it falls on Donovan, too, from like an off-the-court standpoint. I mean, how many years, Spence, did we spend here in LeBron at the year start to plant the seeds of we need better players, like we need to improve our roster? I'm not saying Donovan Mitchell's going to do that, but now that he is committed to you, the Cavs have obviously made a commitment to him. I'm not saying you like directly go to him and you're like, so you're going to sign off on this trade, but like I'm assuming they would have conversations with him about like, hey, listen, we think we can upgrade this team in a certain way. It's going to cost us these things. Like, let's make this fit. Let's do this together. And I'm assuming Donovan has been a pretty good soldier to this point. But I would guess, like, if he didn't think somebody was going to be a good fit, he would speak up about it to the front office. So, yeah, I think it's on both fronts. It's from, like, a leadership standpoint of whatever the future holds for this roster and this team, how does Donovan sort of feel about that and him taking a leadership role with making it work if there is a move that is made. But also, like you said, taking that leadership role on the floor. And yeah, you know, the 35-point night was huge for him. I think, you know, the questions kind of came back out after the Thunder game. But again, I think Donovan Mitchell's been doing it long enough in this league that we can, I think, trust that he's going to be okay.
I think so, too. I think this is more of Cavs fans kind of having concern over maybe his knee or something like that. Like, but here's the thing,
I think the injury questions have popped back up. You're right about that.
The injury question pops up, but I mean, I saw this guy throw down a tomahawk in the open floor in Indiana 4 days ago. Like it's not like he can't dunk anymore. Maybe he's conserving his energy.
In the playoffs last year, you noticed that his leaping was just not there. Like he would do those dunks pregame. And it went from like early in the playoffs when he had been well rested, he could like dunk it cleanly. And then by the end of that playoffs, before he was obviously out against the Celtics, it was like he was struggling to get to the rim. So yeah, I'm with you. Like I'm not noticing that as much, but I get why that's something people think about.
Yeah, I think that he's just struggling finishing at the rim. Like I'm just gonna leave it at that. I don't think that there's any kind of overarching issue with Donovan Mitchell. And this is reason that Kenny Atkinson is so important for this team, though, is because at this point of the season, these guys are pretty well rested and they're healthy. Like that's another point that we can get to as we start wrapping things up here on Courtside with Cavs on SI, is the Cavs had a fully healthy roster with the exception of Amani Bates and Luke Travers on Thursday. That's the first time all season that they've had everyone available to them on the main roster. You look at the rotation, clearly Sam Merrill was the odd man out. It was Isaac Okoro and Ty Jerome who were not making the ninth and tenth.
You know, you gotta do what you gotta do if you're Kenny. So
I think that goes into a conversation we can talk about where what's going on with that, you know, kind of eighth, ninth, tenth guy in the rotation. Will he expand to 11 if, you know, like, cause that's a tough conversation. Like Max Strus is clearly the first or second guy off the bench with Caris LeVert. Then you have George Niang. And then you have your choice between Okoro, Merrill, and Jerome, who are probably the guys that are next in that. But let's go down the list here. Isaac Okoro has not been the same since he's come back from his shoulder surgery or shoulder injury. There's a reason that he's having trouble shooting. He got screened by Ben Simmons directly into his right shoulder. That's his shooting shoulder. So it's logical that he's having trouble from deep. Unfortunately,
conspiracy theory. Ben Simmons can't shoot, so he's like, if I can't shoot, I'm going to make sure nobody can shoot. He takes out Isaac Okoro on purpose so that he's like, I can't believe Isaac Okoro's shooting better than I am. And he just tried to, like, you know, take away somebody else's shot. He's like, he's just trying to get revenge because he can't shoot jumpers. Boom.
I can't say whether or not I agree with that. but it's crappy, though, for Isaac because he had his niche. He had the jump shot going. He was playing phenomenal defense. He was driving and playmaking off second side actions. And then that happens, and he's all of a sudden just kind of lost out there. And how do you factor that into a rotational decision, even though it's out of your control? Like, can you continue to play Isaac as much as you want to play Isaac while you also have Sam Merrill, who is having struggles from beyond the arc for who knows what reason? He just isn't hitting those shots from deep or the timely shots that the Cavs need him to make. You know, his defensive efforts have been up there, and he's always trying to draw charges. He's been better at playmaking and off the dribble this year, but you got to make those shots in order to get yourself into the mix with a team as deep as it is, because especially Ty Jerome is a 6'5 guard who gives you an extra ball handler on the floor. He's doing a lot on the defensive end, just poking the ball away, and he's making his threes, and he's able to touch the paint and kind of energize the team. You're probably going to lose out to that guy because he's able to do a little bit more. So there's that also that enters the equation, and the guys that are outside of the core four in that respect, like, it's hard. It's hard to get 11 out there, especially for what you've been used to playing all season because guys have been banged up or it's been kind of a musical chairs type of situation.
I'm waiting for somebody to jump in the comments with one specific comment, and I haven't seen it yet, luckily. But I'm just waiting, Spence, for somebody to say, you know what the Cavs need? They need Amani Bates to play more minutes. That's what they need, Spence.
That's always the solution for people. Like, it's the classic Cleveland.
Sam Merrill's not knocking down shots, but Amani Bates sure would. Put him out there.
It's the Cleveland quarterback backup situation, always looking to the next guy down the line.
That is, you know what? That is a great, great analogy. That is exactly what it is. Amani Bates is what the Cleveland Browns, like, fifth round pick quarterback. Amani Bates is DTR. Amani Bates is like the quarterback that there might be something there and you just don't know. And so he's got to play more to find out. That's 100% what it is. That's a great analogy by you, Spence. That feels like a great place to wrap up the show.
And Amani is doing his thing in the G League. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, he's playing well, but he's still 20 years old. Like, I don't think he's ready yet.
Like, well, that's the thing. I'm trusting the Cavs on that. Like, I know there's, like, a lot of untapped talent there because of, you know, at one point he was the number one player in the country coming out of high school. I get it. But I'm trusting that the Cavs, like, if they thought he was ready and he was showing that he could
play regularly, he would.
So I'm kind of trying to do this for a living more so than just, like, my excitement over a player that has some potential, you know, like that's just how I view things. But anyway,
correct.
I think you're the same.
Yeah. No, it's clear. It's always looking down the bench. If there were 80 guys on the roster, they'd be looking at the 80th guy and say, you know what? Give him a try. Like, it's just the classic. You always have to see if there's another option instead of letting things play out or, you know, got to go get a trade. Yeah. You know,
it's the same thing that happened to JB Bickerstaff 2 years ago in the playoffs. Everybody was like, well, why wasn't this guy playing? And it was like, probably because, like, he only had seven guys in his rotation. Why wouldn't he
love
play
Lamar
more guys?
Stevens? Like, Lamar Stevens wasn't going to make that
example.
Big of a,
like,
difference.
If Lamar Stevens had played, they still would have lost.
Like, yeah,
it would not have mattered. The Knicks still would have owned them that year. I'm sorry.
The armchair GMs and the armchair quarterbacks on Twitter. You got to love them.
It's just crazy. But we love you guys. We do. We're not trying to be too joking around. I also encourage you to. Please like, follow, subscribe, review the Courtside with the Cavs on SI podcast, wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, the Cavs on SI YouTube channel, where you can watch this show as well. And you can also leave comments in the comments section if you have some thoughts about anything that we talked about today. And subscribing is the biggest thing. We want you to definitely subscribe and keep sharing the word about this show, because I think Spence does a tremendous job from an X's and O standpoint. He's got such a great analytical eye. And I think together we make some pretty sweet music together as a co-host. So looking forward to many more episodes. I think we're trying to come back Tuesday with a new one.
Yeah, we're trying Tuesday to get back on track again. The Cavs schedule has been so wacky. We also had Christmas and New Year's kind of threw off.
Yeah,
he was buying a car. There's a lot going on.
But yeah, we're going to shoot for Tuesday, and we'll see if we hit that or not. But get back on track earlier with episodes earlier in the week. But until then, have a great weekend. We'll see what happens on Saturday against the T-Wolves, and we'll be back at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse for a matchup with the Suns coming up on Monday. I'll talk to you guys again soon. Thanks as always, and be sure to follow along with all things Cleveland Cavaliers with the Cleveland Cavaliers on SI.